When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Greetings, everyone, and welcome to episode number 53 of Real Blend, a podcast that has the same number of Best Director nominations as Bradley Cooper does. You guys know the drill by now.
That's not nice, man.
Wow.
Well, if you had heard the first man one that I was going to make, you'll be happier that I went after Bradley Cooper.
Bradley Cooper podcast.
Can we hear the first man one just so we can give us a second take of your opening?
Greetings, everyone, and welcome to episode number 53 of Real Blend, a podcast that has the same number of Best Picture nominations as First Man.
Wow.
Yeah, same gist.
You have a lot of hate in your heart.
I do.
Yeah.
I do.
Yeah.
But some will argue that that's what they love about this show. They love when we disagree on things. Wait till we get to Sam Jackson Blend. Oh, tease. That's a tease, folks. Later on in the show, we are playing hashtag
we call that a tease.
Sam Jackson Blend. And we've had some great recommendations from people. Listen, you guys know the drill by now. My name is Sean O'Connell. I'm the managing editor here at Cinema Blend. I am one of three illustrious hosts of the weekly Real Blend shenanigans. Joining me, as always, is the passionate president of the First Man Fan Club, Kevin McCarthy of Fox 5.
I'm accepting applications for that fan club, by the way, and your name can't be Sean, and your last name can't be O'Connell, but if you're other than that, you're more than welcome to join me.
Kevin would like to use the airwaves of this podcast to let Damien Chazelle know that the moon landing sequence is Sean. He might be listening to this, Kevin, so tell him.
Well, if he listened to our podcast, he stopped months ago.
Fair.
Well, First Man's a masterpiece. It deserved nominations. We'll get to that when we get to the discussion. But I just got home from work, and the first thing I did was I took the 4K Blu-ray for First Man, though my wife was awesome enough to order and get delivered today, which came out today. And I wanted to know if it expanded to the full IMAX. So Chris Nolan, obviously, his Blu-rays are very well known, Interstellar, Dunkirk, and Dark Knight, for shifting aspect ratios to show the IMAX footage he shot. So if anybody's wondering, anybody's into that techie stuff, First Man does expand, full-blown IMAX, no black bars, 1:4:3 aspect ratio. It's awesome. And it's unbelievable to watch it go from Super 16 to IMAX 70mm film, and it just the jump up in quality. And I was rewatching the moon sequence just now. It's one of the most intimate, beautiful sequences I've ever seen in a film. And Justin Hurwitz's score, it's perfect.
Hey, I'm on this podcast too.
Well, I'm getting to you. Don't worry about it. I'm getting to you. Kevin just said the word Dunkirk, and some people are going to think that the show's over.
Right.
Think this is the official
end. The podcast turned off,
yeah. The man who has to endure the fact that Roma got 10 Oscar nominations today. Jake Hamilton of Fox 32 in Chicago sits in the third chair. Hello, Jake. How are you?
How are you, sir? Good to see you. What does it say that, like, Kevin gets home, and the first thing he does is pops in First Man to watch the last 30 minutes, and I get home, and my first thing is, guys, I'm going to sleep for 45 minutes before we start the podcast. Is this what happens? Is this what 31 looks like? I just nap all the time? Everything hurts now?
I planned on napping, but
I'm grumpy.
When that Blu-ray was at the front door, I was like, there's no way I'm napping. I can't nap. It's sitting in my house.
And now we have to do Real Blend. So, listen, a ton of show to get to today, obviously. I love the fact that people were on the Real Blend Twitter feed this morning as soon as the nominations dropped, and they were saying, essentially, we need you guys to break down everything that happened. And I love that because we were already scheduled to do our podcast today. Good timing. We are going to run through all of the Oscar nominations. We're going to discuss things that made us really happy, things that made us upset. Before we get to that, we have a couple of different staples of the show. And so we will begin with reviews. And we were lucky enough, I don't know if you guys even know this, but we received two new reviews this week. And both of them are fantastic. Of course, every time we always say that if you leave us a review at the top of the show, we will read it. And the first one is by someone named, all right, I'll try this one. It's Metajasar. Metajasar.
My mom ran that one by me. And she was a little worried you might not be able to pronounce it.
Right.
So, but that is right. She just texted me and said, Sean got that right.
Oh, good. Okay. Well, the subject of this is Movie Theater Days. And short and sweet, this podcast is perfect for my commute back and forth to work. The biggest issue is I wish you guys did more shows per week. It's great because it reminds me of the days when I worked in the movie theater, and the way you guys debate reminds me of that time, especially standing in the back. Oh, Kevin, you're going to love this. Especially standing in the back and watching True Romance every day that it was in theaters. Let's get this show to 3 shows per week.
Oh, dear God.
Say, at the very end.
Anybody listening for the first time, to explain the joke, the joke is that my mom writes all our reviews.
Yes.
If you're just tuning in for the first time.
If you're just tuning in at episode 53, we got a long list of stuff we got to fill you in on.
I have to point out the fact that Kevin worked in movie theater. And this True Romance drop in this review means your mom's just tipping her hand to herself. Like, she's got to be a little bit less obvious about the fact that she's writing this.
Well, she was here this weekend visiting, and she wrote that review right in front of me, and I was like, Mom, it's a little too much.
Let's see if the next review.
I don't even know what's true anymore. Like, was she actually visiting? Like, I don't know where the joke stops and where the truth begins, Kevin.
All right, let me break it down truthfully. My mom was visiting. She's never listened to a second of my podcast, our podcast. Right. She did not write the review.
All right. Well, this next one is from Baslol, B-A-S-L-O-L, and says, so much fun to listen to. All right, this is a long one. Gabe, am I reading this whole thing? Yes? No? Sure? Why not? Yes? All right, Gabe shrugs, so I'll get through as much of it as I can.
Gabe stopped caring a long time ago.
Well, because a lot of this is like back padding. Gabe checked out. I love the idea of reading the reviews, and I really love when people submit reviews. It's fantastic, but this is like a novel. All right, I've been listening to Real Blend for a while, and I'm really enjoying this podcast. It's a lot of fun. This terrified me. Some nice person on Twitter today said, I'm not a podcast person, but I've been enjoying interacting with you guys on social. I'm going to go back and listen to all you guys, all your shows as entertainment at work. And she's like, I'm starting at number one and I love it. So I was like, for fun, I was like, all right, I'm going to go back and listen to number one and listen to what it's, and it's horrible. It's really uncomfortable because we were still very much in the like.
And we didn't really do any kind of a show rundown. We kind of just started, if I remember right, we just started talking.
Yes. Well, a lot of the show is just us kind of talking, like turning on the microphones and seeing how it goes. But we were really feeling our way. So if you are that person and you started at one, I apologize. And we get much better. We definitely hit our stride like around episode 27 or 8. So tough it out. You're almost there. You're almost there. Anyway, back to this one.
27 or 28 more hours and we really, really get good. That's like when someone tells me, like, when you start a TV show and they're like, you know, come episode 8 of season 4, the show really starts getting good.
It really kicks in. I've been listening to Real Blend for a while, and I'm really enjoying this podcast. It's a lot of fun to listen to the guys schmooze about the latest news in the industry, talk about upcoming and past awards, review my favorite movies and those I haven't seen and or liked, and inform me about works I hadn't heard of. The vibe is fun, positive, and respectful, no matter their opinions of the people and works that they encounter or their disagreement with each other. In fact, they get along so well that their passionate arguments make me laugh the hardest. Passion is perhaps the reason this podcast is so great. The guys love what they do and have strong opinions about movies and other industry happenings. All their critique and praise of films and people is interesting and entertaining, and it's fascinating to hear about their experiences talking with the people on the creative side of the movies. I'm gonna cut it there because it gets into a whole lot of stuff after that, but I love that because if you heard us today, even just in the minutes leading up into the show, we were arguing about First Man. But like doing it in a way
that
like...
Is that why my phone was blowing up during my nap?
Yeah.
Yes. To my nap time, man.
Yeah, we were arguing about First Man. So that's from Baslol, and then the whole review is up on iTunes, and so if people want to go and read it, it's fantastic. Oh, well, let me get to this. Let's see. They also include some responses from social media. It's a great way to get a feel for different genres and filmmaking styles and to hear about works you may not have come across yet. Real Blend, folks, keep it up. I hope none of you quit first or last, but keep on going. And anyone else still reading down here, check out this pod for yourself. If you enjoy movies, who doesn't, then you'll love Real Blend. I know I'm supposed to end with Dunkirk, but I don't know why because I haven't watched that movie yet, they say.
That's so awesome.
You shouldn't end with Dunkirk for any reason. We don't even know why we end with Dunkirk.
It's an amazing movie.
Well, yeah.
I mean, it's very easy.
Yes.
By the way, Jake, where is your mask, my friend? I was like, did you ever get the mask?
Nothing came. I got my birthday was last Friday, and I got a couple of amazing birthday presents from Kevin. some of which I'll talk to you about, some of which I won't. But the first one that I opened up was the, first of all, it was a CD, which I haven't been given a CD in like 20 years, which is kind of cool. And I was like, oh, I wonder what it is. And I got excited and I opened it up and it was Pitbull's Greatest Hits, which was shocking for a couple of reasons.
One was
that Pitbull has enough songs to justify a Greatest Hits album. And two is that I now possess it. It is now something that I own.
When you open it up, does sand fall out?
Oh god! The third gift, which Jake didn't get, was a Pitbull mask that Shut I wanted. I'm not kidding you. It was like a nice.
Horrifying.
Like realistic Pitbull like singer mask. Wait, did you get this, Jake, or no?
No, I got that.
Oh.
That's close enough.
No, I'm bummed.
It's equally horrifying. In case you can't tell, I'm holding up actually a fairly legit Michael Myers mask.
Yes. Universal sent around Michael Myers masks to a lot of press people for the release of Halloween on 4K. It's really unfortunate. Gabe, please take a picture of this. It's unfortunate that we don't have the Facebook stream anymore. Gabe's going to take a picture of this and put it on the Real Blend podcast. He got it. Good. Very good. All right. While Jake is demasking, let's get into talking points. And really, the only news we're going to get into before Kevin has something to say. Yes, Kevin.
I want to give a shout out to Christopher McQuarrie for a second.
Because
no, you do not get to give him a shout out.
I actually love McQuarrie. One of my favorite directors of all time is Michael Bay. And Christopher McQuarrie defended Michael Bay yesterday on Twitter, and it made me very happy.
I saw that. That was cool.
And I wanted to point this out because somebody tweeted to Christopher McQuarrie saying Michael Bay is a S-word director, but his films appeal to 13-year-old boys. And then McQuarrie responded with, go ahead and make just one like him. I dare you.
Yeah. So, was that unprovoked? Why did that guy take a shot at Bay for no reason?
So I'm looking at, I guess the original tweet was deleted, but somebody was talking about critics of Michael Bay, and then I think this person said that, and then he defended him. So good for you, Christopher McQuarrie, because Michael Bay is an amazing director.
And also, McQuarrie understands more than anyone else, too, the sheer force it takes to mount a movie with that much action.
Oh, yeah.
You know, and practicality. You know, Bay uses a lot of CGI and special effects also, but anytime Bay can take the time to build a set and blow it up, he's going to do it. So, yeah, that's cool.
The Ryan Reynolds video is the best thing ever. When Reynolds was, like, in Italy, and then that car blows up behind him, and he's, like, talking about Michael Bay, like, being a great director for quiet moments in films and character development, and there's just a giant explosion going off behind him. I mean, the guy is amazing. He's made some bad movies, yes, but Bad Boys 2 will always be one of the best action movies ever made.
Let's get to an action movie that we hope lives up to the hype. The trailer for John Wick 3, Parabellum, is that what it's called? Parabellum? Arrived after we recorded our podcast last week. This is the culmination, I believe, of the John Wick trilogy. It has the star of Keanu Blend, which we played last week. And I know some people did actually pick John Wick also. What did you guys think of the trailer? Are you excited for where this is going? I know we were having a conversation about part two. In my opinion, two's not quite as good as one, but I'm excited to see where three goes. What do you guys think about the trailer?
It was beautiful. It was just a beautiful trailer. I mean, the shots were, and this is such a cliche, I use it a lot, but that idea that you could take any frame from that trailer and frame it and put it above like your mantle. And there's just such a style to it that I think is missing from a lot of action movies these days. I'm genuinely very, very, and everything about it, there have been a couple of posters that have come out at this point. I think Kevin sent one of the posters to the text group. It's just everything.
Oh, that one of him standing with like 1,000 people pointing guns at him.
And if you notice it, the shadow of the 1,000 people makes out a 3.
No, really? Does it really?
Yeah, I didn't notice
go
that.
Go back and look at it, and the shadow of the people makes the outline of a 3.
Oh, that's cool. You know, the only thing that concerns me is that how many great part 3s do we have? Like, are there a lot that you can rattle off?
No, you're right.
Return of the King.
Okay.
Toy Story 3.
I have to think of it.
Yeah, see, I mean, there's not a ton. And so, but, and again, I don't really think that John Wick is one of those movies that was conceived to be a franchise. I think that it was so popular that they were like, oh, okay, I guess we can sort of explore this world.
Yeah, but I mean, like, are you really worried about the story? I mean, honestly, like, I just want to see Keanu kill people.
That's the divide on John Wick. Like, by the middle of part two, I got bored of watching him head shoot people. I'd rather have more story.
But this time he does it on a horse.
That's cool. True. That is very
cool. By the
cool.
way, can we talk about the greatest shot in that trailer is when the dogs are helping them? Like that was so beautifully poetic. I'm like, why did they do that in two? Like, what a great thing, like, to, you know, for people who haven't seen John Wick 1, he goes on a rampage because they kill his dog, which is, you know, the most incredible, like, way to connect to a character, in the sense of not that I'm advocating murder, but when you kill someone's dog, you understand why they're so upset. But having the dogs fight with Halle Berry and him in the end of the trailer, I mean, Chad Stahelski is like one of the best directors working today. And he knows action, because he was, was Chad Keanu's double in Matrix, or was it David? Chad was Neo's double in the Matrix. So he understands action and not doing too many cuts. Having Keanu do actual choreography, it looks wild, man. I'm excited about it.
Yeah, it does look wild. The trailer did what it should do, which is get me intrigued for the coming story.
What is Parabellum?
I have no idea.
Doesn't it mean beyond war? Bellum is Latin for war. High school Jake is dating, going back to his Latin class.
Well, and I thought that the trailer had some line, like, in order to prepare for war, or...
Yeah, it's like beyond war. It means like beyond war, or after war, or something like that.
Okay, so I mean, at the end of two, he's basically at odds with everybody, and I guess we'll see where that goes. The one shot in that trailer that kind of knocked me out for a loop is him in the desert. Like, everything seems kind of
contained. Oh my god, I hope he runs into Aquaman.
I do too!
That's the first thing I thought about. If they drop Pitbull's Toto's Africa in there, I'm going to scream. Like, that's gonna, because in Aquaman they go up to the beach, right? And then Pitbull's song plays, unfortunately, the desert scene, is that later or is that then?
It's part of that. They're arriving at the Sahara and Pitbull's song plays, and then later they're walking through. Well, then they get on the plane, and that's when they jump out.
That strange Lee Whannell cameo.
Driving the plane. Oh, is that who's flying the plane? It's Lee Whannell?
That's awesome. Lee Whannell's his writing partner from Saw. Didn't Lee direct one of the Insidious movies too? And he did Upgrade. Upgrade was awesome.
He did Upgrade.
Upgrade was the best Venom movie last year.
I saw people saying that. Yeah.
It's very true.
Yeah.
This week in movies. So there are two movies opening in theaters this week. One was not press screened, and the other was junketed, and I'll get to that. Serenity. Serenity not press screened with Anne Hathaway and Matthew McConaughey. None of us have seen it. So unfortunately, we cannot tell you whether you should see it or not. The Kid Who Would Be King, I can tell you, is a heck of a lot of fun. It's more fun than I anticipated it to be. It's directed by Joe Cornish, who did Attack the Block many, many years ago. A great, great UK neighborhood versus aliens sci-fi comedy that actually introduced everybody to John Boyega before Boyega was in Star Wars. And he's returning. Joe Cornish is returning with The Kid Who Would Be King. It's a contemporary Knights of the Round Table story where a kid who, he's not even really picked on or bullied at school. He's an outcast at school. And he finds the sword and the stone, realizes that he is a descendant of King Arthur and is able to pull the sword from the stone, and then has to put together a new Knights of the Round Table in order to fight off an evil played by Rebecca Ferguson from the Mission Impossible movies. And the hook is Patrick Stewart is playing a version of Merlin, and it's just really fun. It moves great. Kevin, you'll be really impressed by the fact that it builds a ton of practical sets. So there's, like, you'll go into Morgana's lair, which is the villain's lair, and it feels like actual places that you can go to, which lends a lot of credibility to it. The kids are really great. And the main kid in it is Andy Serkis's son, and I think he's making his screen debut.
He was in Mowgli, but I think he played an animal in the film. I guess you could say it's a screen debut, yeah.
So I would absolutely recommend everybody go see it. But then something really fun happened over the weekend. Fox did a junket for it, but they wanted journalists to bring their kids because they had a bunch of activities that they were doing tied to the movie. And they did it at a high school called Xavier High School, which is very funny because Patrick Stewart was there and we were interviewing him, and everybody was like, who's going to be the first person to mention the fact that Charles Xavier is here in Xavier High School? But it was really strange because while you were waiting to go into the room, and so I brought my 10-year-old, Brendan, and he asked questions during it. Everybody was incredibly nice during the interview. But while you were waiting to go in, Andy Serkis was outside watching the monitors of how his kid was doing in the junket, like just like a proud father. He was just being a proud dad. And when we came out of the room after Brendan had interviewed Patrick Stewart and other members of the cast, Andy Serkis is standing there and he's like, ah, great job. That was great. You did really good.
Wow. That's awesome.
And
that's
crazy.
Okay,
did you just go nuts?
Oh, well, so that's the thing. Like, Andy Serkis says to Brendan, like, great job. You know, you did so good. Those are really good questions. And Brendan's like, thanks. I appreciate it. And then I was like, and Andy Serkis looks at me like, oh, isn't that so cool? And I was like, dude, I'm so proud. I said, I kind of get how you feel, you know, because you're watching your son do a press junket. And I was like, oh, but it must be totally different because he's like the star of a major movie and you're Andy Serkis. And then later I had to like go to Brendan and be like, Bren, I wish you were older because like, I was like, do you remember Snoke from the Star Wars movies? And he's like, yeah. And I'm like, that's him. And Brendan's like, what are you talking about?
Gollum, I don't understand. King Kong.
I've not shown my son Lord of the Rings and won't because oh, why wow. would I
it's
do
a,
that?
It's a brilliant trilogy.
But Black Panther.
But there's a chance that your son actually has good taste.
Yeah, why are you trying to turn your
maybe
son
maybe
it
skipped
into
a generation or he got it from his mom.
He hasn't even seen Black Panther. Brendan hasn't
Wait,
seen Black
have
Panther
have you shown
yet.
Him Forrest Gump?
No, God, no, no.
Oh,
I would
wow.
not show him any
this is,
of this.
This is bad
Forrest
parenting.
Gump.
Sean!
Someone needs to call the authorities.
What 10-year-old would watch Forrest Gump?
Why are you keeping
it's
him
American
from
history.
Great cinema?
We watch plenty of other entertaining things.
Did you guys hear about Andy Serkis' favorite Nick Cage movie, by
oh,
the way?
Jesus no, I haven't. Christ. What is it?
Oh, it's Mandy Serkis. I read about that the other day in Entertainment Weekly. I was really excited about it.
So we ran through the list of Andy Serkis' credits, and it is kind of mind-blowing, the number of things that he's been part of. But not a lot of things that a 10-year-old has seen. And if a 10-year-old has seen the movie, he's not Andy Serkis. He's CGI man who's covered up in a million different things. So anyway, that was very, very
That's cool. amazing, by the way. I could not imagine. Well, first of all, the idea of having your son do the interviews, that's got to be surreal, full circle, which is awesome that he was able to have that opportunity. And then on top of that, to walk out and have Andy Serkis sitting there. I mean, like Jake was saying in the text chain, I would have freaked out about that just personally.
Shove my kid aside. I'm like, move aside. Yeah.
Jake said it, and it wasn't until he said it afterwards in the text chain that it really hit me. He said, one of the greatest actors living just complimented your son. And yeah. I was like, oh, God, you're right. Like, that's so true. It's kind of mind-blowing. So.
The only thing you should have said in response is, let's all go grab a Caesar salad for lunch.
This morning,
I'm amazed anyone listens to this freaking podcast. I swear to God.
Jake, do you get it? Because he played Caesar in Planet of the Apes.
In Planet of the
and
Apes.
And Caesar salad's a food item.
Yeah. This morning, the Oscars, the Academy announced the nominations for the 91st Academy Awards.
Jake, was that today?
Gabe is putting in a link to all of them. I guess I should open it up. I'm going to just open the floor and say, because the discussion, I'll give everybody a little behind the scenes of the text chain. The text chain went nuts this morning, and with omissions, right? With some of us really being upset with things that didn't make the cut. Kevin might have said, did you say this is the worst Best Picture field you've ever seen?
Dude, you say that every year.
I don't think I've ever said that before. I think these
you say
are
it
these,
every year.
Besides a couple of highlights, like Black Panther getting nominated for the first superhero movie ever, I would argue that this was one of the worst years I've ever seen for Oscar nominations.
Okay,
ever.
So before we get to negativity, before we get to snubs, I want us to talk about things that we, like, legitimate surprises, like full-on surprise. Were there any? Were there anything that stood out to you guys as, oh my God, I can't believe this happened? I want to start in the director category, because the director of Cold War getting in, it's a beautiful film. And I understand that people are singling out for the cinematography and everything, but no one had him on the list of making the cut for Best Director. That stunned me. So what jumped out to you guys as big time shocks?
I was genuinely excited for Yalitza and Marina from Roma.
Okay.
I was just happy to see Yalitza get nominated. I didn't know for sure if it was going to happen. Very well deserved. I mean, like, that's the thing. Like, you know, I was very disappointed in a lot of what happened today with the Academy Award nominations, so that leads me down a very negative path of thought process. And I was explaining this to my anchors on the air, who were making fun of me for being upset about certain things, like First Man and things like that. And they were, like, making fun of me, like, oh, Kevin, you know, whatever, like, you know, joking around, Kevin's sad, whatever. I said, okay, rewind back to Sunday when everyone on the planet was freaking out about that stupid call that happened in that football game. I'm not a sports guy.
That was not a stupid call, man. It changed the course of sports history.
But I understand what you're saying.
I get what you're saying.
No, hold on. Let me rephrase. The call, yeah. I'm referring to the Rams-Saints game.
Yeah.
The call that was not made.
Yeah. Yes.
The pass interference call.
Yes. Theoretically leading the Saints to the Super Bowl and not the Rams. I'm agreeing with you that it was dumb not to make the call. That's the point I'm trying to make. Anyways, so when that happened.
But this is your sports.
Right. So yeah.
That's fair.
The Oscar nominations to me are the playoffs. So it's the precursor to what happens on the Academy Awards. So I spend all 365
days. This is the NFC AFC game.
Exactly.
Of the Oscars.
And I spend 365 days a year, there you go, watching movies. And so when an award nomination comes out like this for the biggest stage of the award shows and things happen that I feel are wrong, of course I'm going to get emotional. So I say things like to you guys, like, I'm not going to watch the show. I'm not going to do this. You know, worst nominations ever. I'm not saying that there aren't highlights here. There's good things that happened. I mean, and we'll get to those. I'm very happy for Roma, very happy for Yalitza. But to answer your question in short, the Yalitza Marina nomination made me very happy.
You got one? One that really...
Honestly, there weren't a lot of pleasant surprises. Like the nominees that I was pretty much happy about were kind of ones that I really... Like Spider-Verse, I was very happy about Spider-Verse, but I kind of expected to. Honestly... Probably the one that I went, oh, I wasn't expecting that. That makes me happy. Was Ready Player One getting visual effects?
Yes,
that really made me happy, and I honestly didn't think it was going to happen.
Yeah, you both kind of thought that wouldn't happen, and I'm surprised. Those visual effects are
Ready
fantastic.
Ready Player One hasn't been a part of the conversation, and Black Panther visual effects have been a part of the conversation, and those visual effects suck.
It's nothing to do with Ready Player One not being deserving. Ready Player One deserves to win that award. But because Ready Player One was not in, like Jake just said, Ready Player One has not been in any conversations about anything Oscars. So I just figured that they were just going to forget about it, or they weren't even campaigning it. And so that's why Black Panther, as Jake was saying, there was an actual conversation that Black Panther might get nominated for visual effects, when the visual effects are probably the worst part of that movie, unfortunately. It's a great movie, but the waterfall sequence looks really bad. Like, Infinity War clearly has much better special effects. But
And that got a nomination.
Yeah.
That did.
As did Solo.
Yes. Solo feels like the kind of movie, like, every year, like, a Transformers movie gets into that category, right? And everyone's now a Transformers movie has an Oscar nomination.
It is every Star Wars movie that's ever existed has now been nominated for an Oscar.
Okay. I would pay good money to get in the hold of the producers of the Academy Awards and have them play the name scene during that sequence. And then what they do is, the reason why it's nominated for visual effects is because they take it out. Like, they literally change the mouth. It's no longer there. It'd be like the greatest trick ever. That is what needs to happen at the
Can't
Oscars.
Take
this
year. It back. Solo was an Oscar-nominated film.
Is Suicide Squad. So enjoy that combination.
All right, here are the 8 Best Picture nominees. I think we kind of expected all of these. I think it's fair to say we might have hoped for 10 because 2 others.
Are we ever going to get 10? Because it's a percentage, right? You have to earn a certain percentage of votes.
50%. Is it 50%?
Are we ever going to get 10?
No, probably not. But I feel like there should be 10 every year.
There's so many things I'm mad about.
We're staying positive. The best picture nominee is Black Panther. Let's do this. Everyone that I name, you tell me whether you think it belongs there. Okay?
All right.
Black Panther.
Yes.
Yes.
Black Klansman.
Yes.
Yes.
Bohemian Rhapsody.
Yes.
No.
The Favorite.
Yes.
Green Book.
No.
Mm. I'd say no. I would say no.
It deserves to be there. I think it deserves to be there.
Does it?
I think a lot of people like it a lot. Yes.
It's good.
Okay, so that doesn't matter.
There are worse movies.
A lot of people like Transformers movies. Doesn't mean that they deserve to be there.
No, there are worse movies that have won Best Picture over the past couple of years.
I like Green Book. It's not Best Picture.
It's not a bad movie. It's getting crapped on a lot now because it's winning a couple of things.
But it's like, but it's not that particularly well made.
No one walked out of that movie and went,
aside from the performances, which were nominated, right?
Amazing.
There's nothing about
Bohemian Rhapsody. The three of us watched Bohemian Rhapsody together, and when that ended, none of us thought it was a Best Picture nomination.
I love Bohemian Rhapsody,
but I don't care. Did you think it was a Best Picture nomination?
No, I did not.
No, right? So the race changes things. Okay, Roma.
Yes.
Sure.
Yes. Oh no! I want a definitive yes or no from Jake on this one.
It's very well made. I could say yeah. Jake.
Okay.
I'm stunned. It leads. I'm stunned. It leads the nominations with 10.
Everyone thought Star is Born was going to lead nominations today.
And it's a black and white foreign language film with no stars.
Do you realize that
made by a streaming giant
on Oscar night, Alfonso could walk out with 5 Oscars in his arms because he could get he would win it for picture, he would win it for foreign film, he would win it for cinematography, he would win it for screenplay, and he would win it for director. He could well win all 5.
Some might argue he's a talented filmmaker.
So worst case scenario is he wins 4? Like a bad night is he wins 4 Oscars?
But Jake, what you're...
And he was on our podcast!
What you're forgetting is that, he's going to walk out with a certificate saying thank you for being on Real Blend next to his Academy Award. So they're going to hand it to him.
Oscars will be next to his certificate.
So you're saying he could go Homa with 4 Oscars.
There we go.
All right.
Thank you for playing along, Sean.
You're
welcome.
Every week. Thank you. All right, after Roma, A Star is Born.
Yes.
Yes. And yes. Vice.
No.
Yeah,
no.
I love Vice.
No.
All right.
As did the Academy.
Before we turn it over to things that made us really angry, I want to celebrate the best songs for this reason. The nominations for Best Original Song have me really excited for what might happen at the ceremony. And then I was reminded that the Academy doesn't let people do this. Like, I think Where the Lost Things Go from Mary Poppins, I know you guys don't like the movie, but that song is beautiful. And if Emily Blunt gets up to sing it, that could be a fantastic moment. Obviously, Shallow is nominated. And if Bradley Cooper and Lady Gaga perform it, I think that could be a tremendous moment at the Oscars.
They should start the Oscars with that.
Right, exactly. Yeah, I argue that if you're not going to have a host and you won't have a monologue, then why don't you open it with that? There's another song, too.
Kendrick Lamar, All the Stars.
Black Panther, right? Tim Blake Nelson singing from the Ballad of Buster Scruggs.
Yes, I love that song.
If he comes out to sing it. But then somebody reminded me today that they don't often let the actors sing the songs. They get someone else.
They did for Les Mis.
They did, but Emma Stone didn't sing Audition. And there was another version of someone who got nominated recently.
But is it because they don't allow it? I could see Emma Stone straight up just not wanting to do it. I mean, especially for Emma Stone for Audition, I mean, she was probably gearing up to win the Oscar. And if you're legitimately thinking you have a shot at winning, you don't want to worry about doing all of that.
I agree with that. And if it's the actors saying they don't want to do it, then I totally understand. But if it's Gaga and Bradley Cooper, don't you assume they're going to do it?
I think so.
Yeah, I think they're going to.
And
didn't someone ask him about performing at the Oscars and he said they would?
Yeah, I think
think Kendrick will perform, which would be awesome.
Oh, that would be great, wouldn't it?
That'd be really cool.
I mean, that'd be amazing. I mean, Kendrick is one of the greatest performers working today. So, if I'm the Academy Awards, you have Kendrick perform and you have Gaga perform and you have Bradley Cooper perform and you have... I can't see Emily Blunt doing it, though.
I guess not. Yeah, I'd be of that group. I'd be most leery of her agreeing to get up and sing.
Plus,
her song.
What else was she nominated for? Was she nominated at all?
No, and was the biggest surprise. Is that
and
there
no
was
quiet
a time?
Place.
There was a time during this conversation when we thought Emily Blunt had a chance to contend for Quiet Place and Mary Poppins.
But the
and
movie.
But I mean, but more. did. We well, really, th- I mean, like, I think we talked about A Quiet Place being a contender because it was well received by critics, it was well received by fans, it did well at the box office. But I didn't wake up this morning thinking this is the morning A Quiet Place takes over. I mean, I'm not super surprised that it only got one nomination. Ironically, it only got a sound nomination, which I think is kind of funny.
That's funny.
But
Paramount thought so because Paramount pushed the two of them out often to host these. Award screening, you know, where show the movie and then the cast gets up.
Yeah, but I mean, what else did they have though? I mean, like, I feel like that's just Paramount saying that's really all they got.
Sherlock Gnomes. I don't know. Is that even this year? I don't remember. I don't remember.
Bumblebee.
Paramount doesn't have a hole. I wish you guys saw Kevin's face. Oh, God. All right, let's turn it over to snubs. Movies that we thought were going to get in and didn't, or nominations that did happen and you guys have no clue why. We have to start with Kevin. He's so fired up. Kevin, which one made you the angriest?
Adam McKay directed nomination over Bradley Cooper.
Okay, yeah. And that the but lack of Bradley Cooper is...
You can't say
is...
who got it over him.
Okay.
Because well, then, he's been in the conversation for a while.
All right, then let's separate McKay. It's not a... It is a badly directed film. It's not a good... It is performance amazing, but that film's direction is...
It's entirely his vision. That is entirely his vision. That is his film. That is an Adam McKay film.
I think the direction in Vice ruins the film. I like Vice. I actually gave Vice a good review.
I would argue the Academy disagrees with you.
Well, that's fine. But when do you take stock in the Academy being right or wrong?
No, but like it's clear. Like okay, but that's clearly like he intended it to be like that. That is his movie. Whether you like that style or not is one thing in and of itself.
Okay, but wait. Okay, but by that argument, A Star is Born is Bradley Cooper's vision, and that thing got picture, three acting nominations, a screenplay, cinematography. It's nominated in all those categories, but they don't recognize Bradley? I can't understand that.
Why it makes no sense. If your film is nominated for Best Picture, it should also come along with the Best Director nomination. That should be an automatic thing.
There are a couple of director nominations. I mean, no, what, Cold War didn't get nominated?
Right, the other four did. Yeah.
Okay.
So there's eight pictures
and
five director
slots.
So you could make
the argument that that's the spot that took Cooper.
Theoretically.
Okay. Well, whatever spot took it, Adam McKay is not a best director worthy for Vice, in my personal opinion. I think that that film was sloppy. It was messy. It was completely jarring. It was edited poorly. But on top of that, the performances are incredible. And some of the writing is great. I actually liked Vice. But... it is not a well-directed movie.
But my argument with Vice, too...
Damien Chazelle. That we're talking about two filmmakers who made two of the best films of the year, First Man and Star is Born. I could walk through each film and tell you why they deserve a nomination. Not just because the movie was great, but what they did as directors. What performances they got out of their actors... No green screen for First Man. Production, I mean, everything about that movie is unbelievably well directed.
But Kevin, I would argue you know more about this stuff than the Academy members do.
Well, that's a problem. That is a big problem. If that's true, that's an issue.
You say all of this stuff like it's the first time. Like we do this every year.
I know.
Every year we do this, and you act like it's the first time that this has
But Jake, as someone who did like Vice, and I like Vice too, but I think you like it more than all three of us. You know, of the three of us, you're a bigger fan of it.
Yeah.
Was direction really something that stood out to you?
No, because I felt like he was executing the vision of his screenplay. I feel like if you're going to give him something, you give him the screenplay nomination. But
I'm okay with that.
It got editing, right?
It did, yeah.
The editing is horrible in that movie.
To make like a little bit of a lateral move.
Well, hold on. I'm going to look while you're talking, but
The movies that are considered to be the three front runners, Roma, A Star is Born, and Green Book, none of those three got what are considered to be all of the nominations you need in order to win Best Picture, because Roma didn't get editing, which is a big one not to get. In fact, I think the three movies that got acting, screenplay, direction, picture, and editing, I don't know if I already said editing, were Vice, The Favorite, and Black Klansman.
Correct.
So does that mean that we're sleeping on those three movies?
Theoretically, yes.
Because editing is usually a pretty good pointer. I just feel like everything that we normally use to figure out the equation is off this year. Everything is off.
Well, but the only thing is those three movies, which you just mentioned, you're right, they ticked all those boxes. None of them yet have won any of the bigger precursors.
That's fair.
But the precursors have been spread out all over the place. Yep. We did, Critics' Choice did Roma, PGA did Green Book, Golden Globe so far have gone with Green Book and Bohemian Rhapsody because of their split categories. We still have SAG. That'll be a big one.
If a SAG goes to A Star is Born, is A Star is Born back in it? Or is that a last gasping breath?
I don't think A Star is Born is out.
I was going to bring this up. And I was thinking about this a couple of weeks ago. And then I saw someone else brought it up on Twitter, and I can't remember who it was. And it really sort of solidified the sneaking suspicion. when was A Star Is Born ever truly the front runner? It didn't win Toronto.
Right.
Green Book did. It hasn't really won anything major as we're going through the awards season.
Right.
Were we saying it was the front runner without it ever actually being?
Yeah.
Was that just in our minds?
That's a great point.
I don't think it ever actually was. And we're all just sort of stopping and going, wait, it didn't ever actually win anything. And I don't think anyone's realizing that harder right now than Bradley Cooper.
Yeah, that's very true.
And to answer your question again, because you asked me what the most upset I am about, the biggest shock I had today was Justin Hurwitz. And that made no sense considering he won the
Globe. That was more shocking to you than Bradley Cooper not getting director?
Both of those were on equal playing fields. Here's why. Hurwitz and Cooper, I thought, were 100% locks. I would have bet money on those. Here's why. Cooper, I mean, the idea of Star Is Born, Best Picture, it seemed like it made sense. Hurwitz won the Golden Globe and the Critics' Choice for Best Score, and he wasn't even nominated today. Think about that for a second. That's huge. That is like, what the heck? And then no First Man Best Picture nomination, no Damien Chazelle director, no Claire Foy, no Ryan Gosling. I mean, that movie,
we were all texting this morning, I mean, and we were all fairly confident that First Man would get a Best Picture nomination.
Yeah.
I would have put some money in it.
They announced a bunch of categories, then they took a break, and then they came back. And the early ones, First Man picked up visual effects, sound mixing, sound editing. And once it started picking up a few of those, I was thinking, oh, okay, wait a second. Maybe the Academy really did react well to First Man. And even though I'm the one who didn't like it as much as the other guys did, it feels like an Academy movie. It feels like something that as long as enough people got out to see it, that they would throw their support behind it.
Jake's going to disagree with me, but to this day, I still think that movie was ruined by the politics. I think that
Vice
film,
got eight nominations.
No. Vice, first of all, Vice was not ever, what's it called? Banned. What's the word I'm looking for? What were people doing with First Man? They
protesting?
Were
protesting,
like boycotting.
Whatever the word I'm looking for is.
No, but Kevin, liberal First Hollywood in the Academy it. Would almost over-nominate First yeah. Man to make up for that.
That movie lost all traction the minute that story hit. It was, and Jake will disagree with me, but to this day,
it's
I will sit here
and tell
you.
The fact that it made $8 and it came out the weekend after A Star Is Born and no one was talking about it.
I just disagree.
That movie died the weekend it came out, dude.
My take is just that it's not as good as you both.
You're
you guys
not
think
as
it
good.
It's not that good. It really isn't good. I gave it a multiple tries, and it's just not. It's not that good. It's lifeless.
If by not good you mean an absolute masterpiece, then yeah, you're.
Oh, that
you're,
is.
You're,
yes,
you're right.
I,
yeah,
that's exactly that, what that, I meant by that.
Because
I mean, not I like a bunch of boys.
Yeah.
Listen, I will say that Claire Foy not getting a nomination stunned me because she seemed to be the one who was the face of this movie, which is odd because it's Damien's film and Ryan Gosling is the lead character. But sometimes a supporting performance stands out a little bit more and she gets into a category because there's room in the category. Actors seem to be a little stacked this year. Supporting actors seemed a little bit more open. Let me see who might have gotten her. Oh, Marina. Marina probably got the one that might have gone to Claire Foy, and I'm fine with that. That's fantastic.
All right, you Jake, guys go. What were you guys?
Yeah, Jake.
About?
What annoyed you? Is there anything that really stood out as like, why is this here?
I mean, it's look. I you know say what you want to about Bradley Cooper as a director. You know, Star Is Born, obviously, because I'm a big fan of it. But you nominate three performances. You nominate it for Best Picture.
Right.
You nominate it for screenplay.
Exactly.
Like, at what? The only thing I can think of, and this is sometimes what I wonder, I call this the sort of the Tom Hanks effect, because I do think this is what happened to Tom Hanks a couple of times, which is Academy members go, well, Bradley Cooper is going to get nominated, so let me put this other person that I really like a little further up, maybe to help that person out. And then enough people do that. I don't think people actively thought that Bradley Cooper didn't do a good job as a director. I think too many people thought he was a sure thing and didn't write his name down.
Okay.
But, I mean, because you can't give him all of that stuff and then go, but you're a bad director.
But what you just said is what's wrong with the Academy.
Oh, I agree with you.
And the Academy and the awards, and the reason why I was so upset today, and it legitimately, I was just watching the ending of First Man, and I was crying, I had tears in my eyes, because it's such a beautiful film, and like, and I'm sitting there thinking, why am I getting so fired up about this? And we all do this for a living because we love what we do, but we are living in a world where the Oscars are completely run by campaigns and politics. And it's not to, anything to do with what really is the best. And what Jake just said probably happened. Like, it literally was probably a, yeah, he deserves a nomination, but you know what? He already has this, so let's just drop him down a little bit.
I mean, but is that any different than saying, well, I'm going to vote for Glenn Close because she's been nominated at this point now 7 times? To me, it's no different.
That's the exact situation, which is what's wrong. And I feel like this. Listen, we all get fired up. This is what we do for a living. At the end of the day, the Oscars don't ever speak to me as a movie fan, ever. Really, in reality, they really don't. I mean, there's a few that come out every once in a while. You know, with an Alfonso winning for Gravity, I think he won director for that. Mm-hmm. Things like that. There are things that do make sense, but for the most part, I'm so happy for Roma, but I cannot believe what happened today, especially with First Man. And I just don't understand how that type of movie got. I mean, I don't know if you guys saw the First Man Twitter account. They tweeted out what they got nominated for. It made me so depressed. Like, it was like these four important nominations, but like, man.
Oh, I know. I had a similar thing with the event. So, like, my takeaway from this is that I don't have a passionate defense or, revulsion to any of the crop this year. This year's crop to me, like my top two movies of the year were Infinity War and Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse. So they were never going to be Oscar contenders in the first place. And I saw Marvel Studios put up a graphic and it was like, congratulations to Avengers Infinity War on your Oscar nomination for visual effects. And
your one your single one, right. nomination.
So, and hey, great, right? Great. That's fantastic. But we've said before, if I were to swap out which one should be in the Best Picture conversation, to me, I'd put Infinity War ahead of Black Panther. But I understand a lot of the reasons why Black Panther is in there. And Black Panther was number 10 on my list. So I'm not mad, you know.
To what you just said, Sean. Go ahead, Jake. Sorry.
I was just going to say, like, here's what sort of helps me sleep at night about the Oscars. Because I accepted a long time ago that my particular opinions about movies are probably not going to line up, case in point, you know, with the Academy Awards. But if the Academy Awards make the average moviegoer, someone at home, look at Roma on Netflix and go, you know what? Okay, I'm going to give it a shot. Yeah. Or an average moviegoer is at home at or at a movie theater and Aquaman sold out, but they go, oh, but you know what? You know, The Favorite got 10 nominations, so let me try this movie out. If it points the average moviegoer in the direction of that they never would have gone and down a path that they never would have walked, I consider that to be a victory for the Oscars. Not to justify my taste, but to tell the average moviegoer out there, hey, there are things other than cars that transform into robots. There are other things other than superheroes. There are things that could blow your mind if you just really just sit down for 2 hours and open up your mind to these things. And I think that is what helps me sleep at night, because I go, okay, you know what? Like, you know, people will find First Man. First Man will be fine. You know, like, and it sucks that it's not getting the credit it deserves. But I think First Man will be one of those movies that in 20 years we look back on and go, yeah, the Academy missed that. But then again, Godfather Part 3 got nominated for Best Picture when there were only 5 nominees. Right. So it very rarely is a true snapshot of cinematic greatness.
But playing, to Jake's point, which is a great point, and playing the Oscars game, spinning it in a way.
That's exactly what it is. You're absolutely right. It is like running for president.
Yeah. I mean, and that's the thing. So, and we get emotional because we care about these movies. You know, if First Man won Best Picture, I would be over the moon, no pun intended. I did not mean to make that joke, actually.
Nah, that was actually good.
But that
your
was actually
best pun of the show wasn't accidental.
That was not
I
on
actually
purpose.
Respect that one.
Wait, what number was First Man in your top 10?
It was three for me.
Three? Okay.
Well, and actually, upon rewatching, I probably would have swapped it with Star Is Born to 2. To Jake's point, I'll play the game for a second here. Black Panther nomination. It's not the best movie of the year. It's also not the best superhero movie of the year. But
it's not even the best Marvel movie of the year.
Agreed. So my opinion on the Black Panther thing is I love that that got nominated because my hope is that we get exactly what Jake just said. We need to get out of the mindset of what an Oscar movie is and find that different genres, horror, comedy, can all be appreciated in an Oscar state of mind. If Panther opens that door, allows different genres to then be accepted into what a best picture is. Now, the question here is Black Panther nominated because it's they think it's one of the best movies of the year? Or is it nominated because of what it did culturally and how many people saw it and just what it did for the world? Now, that what is a best picture? I mean, that's a question that I don't know if any of us can answer. Is a best picture a movie that is the best movie made? And if so, what are the qualities that go into that? Or is it a film that shifted culture and changed the way we thought and created conversation?
You so, never know. It's all subjective.
And
it's
like the problem.
You could talk to, you know, 100 different people in the Academy, 1,000 different people, and you might get 1,000 different answers.
Well, listen, going right back to the sports analogy that we used earlier, what is pass interference? Clearly, everybody
that
has a different...
That was pass interference!
Yeah, that's not even a question.
But it wasn't.
It was interference. What are you talking
about?
They
back and said they were wrong.
Okay.
Yeah, they actually did say that. Yeah, I mean, and I'm not a sports guy, and I watched that clip and said, how is there no flag on that play? That doesn't make any
sense.
See,
I hate the Saints so much that it was
so
delightful to me.
But there's your bias. You're like, oh, I'm glad that there's no pass interference.
Why do you make
– we're not going to make our predictions yet. We'll make predictions much closer to the actual show. But I just want to –
Okay, Kevin, go
ahead. No.
Jake, go.
We're also
Kevin said something in the text thread today that I truly do not believe is going to happen. He said that he's not going to watch the Oscars. And Kevin – I gotta call BS, man. I do not believe on February 24th you're not gonna watch the Oscars. I do not.
He actually said, come over. He's like, come over. You'll see. It's not gonna be on.
I do not believe it. I don't.
Because first of all, Lauren's gonna watch the Oscars. So it'll be on.
So it'll be on in the McCarthy household.
Yeah.
Jake, you're right. I'm gonna watch them.
Huzzah!
But I will say this. When I said it today on the text, I meant it. That is literally how I felt at the moment. I was so angry. About okay, so First Man.
Dude, you caved in like 8 hours,
well,
man.
It's not that I caved. We all make decisions when we're emotional that aren't realistic.
To do this podcast.
But literally exactly what you guys said today. It's like, you know, I was very upset. I could not believe.
You were tech today, dude.
I was. Dude, I wish we had more time to quote Denzel from Man on Fire.
We had more time.
I'll never forget
that. If they were to make a movie about this particular episode of the podcast, I picture like a pan across to like me in bed at night sleeping soundly, and then it fades to Sean in bed at night sleeping soundly, and then it fades to Kevin lying in bed staring intently at his ceiling, and then it fades up to a ceiling, and there's just a giant First Man poster, and a single tear rolls down his cheek.
No, I've cut a hole in my roof, and I have the moon coming down into my room. It's like it's just the moon right there, like staring at it. And then I heard Hurwitz's score
and that,
playing
that
in the
red
back.
Blood moon the past few days was just one last marketing ditch for the First Man Blu-ray.
I legit have to ask though, because you were reacting to the nominations live on your show on Fox 5.
Yeah.
Can people go watch? I want to watch them. I have not seen it. Can people watch it on their YouTube channel or something?
It was weird because, not to get too inside baseball, but I don't know how Jake felt about this. I thought the nominations were coming out at 8:40, so we went live at 8:30, and they were still doing like costume design and all. So like we're
I was wondering how you were doing that. I was like strategically.
It was awkward.
From an on-air perspective, how do you do that?
We had to, like, cut out, go back to weather, traffic, come back to me. But, like, I was already so upset about Justin Hurwitz not being nominated that I just went up to the studio depressed anyways. But I just... It's amazing to me what happened today. And on the flip side, I'm so excited for Roma. I cannot... And to Jake's point, I literally had that exact thought today. I was sitting at my desk, and I was looking at the trending on Twitter. And I saw Roma trending. I'm like... How many people tonight are going to go to Netflix and watch that?
Yeah.
That's cool.
Like, okay, Grinch, I was not a massive Roma fan. Not a massive Roma fan. Have sort of been turned into this villain that just hates Roma now. But but I love this idea that the average moviegoer will now see it on their Netflix queue and go, well, now I gotta give it a shot because it got 10 nominations. I think that's fantastic. And if they get 20 minutes into it and decide they don't like it, that's awesome. That's 20 minutes more than they probably ever would have watched otherwise.
Yep.
Sean, let me ask you guys this. And we do this every week, and I'm sure it'll change again next week. As we sit here right now, I think Roma wins Best Picture.
I don't see how it doesn't. I mean, even though it didn't get the... I mean, it wouldn't be the first movie to ever win and not have an editing nomination. That was the glowing omission to me was, well, that editing's usually pretty important. If I had to push all my chips in one corner, I got to give it to Roma.
Sean?
Yeah, I'm going to also. For this reason, it does feel like this Academy is changing through the moves that they've made in their membership. And between Moonlight and Shape of Water, they're going with more non-Academy, what we consider Academy movies, that now I do kind of believe that the black and white foreign language film with no stars from a streaming giant has the best shot right now to win Best Picture. But I will say that the second leg of the campaign starts right now. Yeah. Like nobody
it's
knew
a whole
what the,
different game now.
Yes, 100%. And so, you know, everybody's going to change how they campaign and everybody's going to change. And Kevin, you say it all the time. Jake says it. It's a campaign. It really doesn't have to do with quality. Quality gets you in the race, but then the race shifts. And it's how many people can you convince that you belong at the top of the heap? And so is Netflix going to go all in? Jake is, if anyone had a chance to see him, he is currently pulling out every piece of marketing that we received from Netflix for Roma. So I have to believe that they've given everything in their arsenal.
Yeah.
How much more stuff for the second leg of this tour? We're all going to Mexico City. I think we're literally going to get plane tickets to Mexico City.
My doorbell's going to ring and Alfonso's at the door. Hey, can I shoot, can I film in your house? I want to do like a short film. I got to say one thing about about Roma. I actually would have no problem with that movie winning. I would be happy about it.
Of course, it's brilliant.
Yeah.
It's brilliant.
But what about that? I saw a tweet, and I don't know who to give credit to for this, so whoever tweeted this, I'm giving you, I guess, some type
it
of
was
credit.
Me.
But someone said something interesting about the comparing Star is Born, no director nomination, to what happened to Ben Affleck for Argo. Mm. And whether or not that no directing nomination will create sympathy votes to give it Best Picture. To this day, and I can't prove this, Argo, in my opinion, only won because it did not get a Best Director nomination and people rallied behind it because Ben Affleck was snubbed. Could that happen to A Star is Born?
I don't feel like, maybe. One, I still, if I remember right, I'm trying to, it was, you know, obviously it's been a few years. And actually, Tony Mendez just died. I don't know if you guys knew that, the guy that he played.
Yeah, I saw that.
I felt like there was a little bit more goodwill toward Affleck during that Oscar season than there was... than there is currently for Bradley Cooper. I actually remember the Critics' Choice Awards that year that Argo came out happened the morning that Oscar nomination. Oscar nomination. So he was with us the night that he didn't get an Oscar nomination. And there was just this, like, everyone was just kind of going up to him, kind of patting him on the back. And I don't feel like people feel that way about Bradley Cooper.
Remember what he said when he got on stage?
Didn't he say, thank the Academy? Yeah.
That was amazing.
I just don't feel like it's having that same ripple effect like it did with Argo.
All right,
I just want to make sure that he's not Sadly Cooper. I just feel so bad about the director nomination. It makes me upset. I actually feel bad about it because it's a great film.
He got 3 Oscar nominations. His movie made $400 million worldwide. He's married to a supermodel, has a beautiful child.
Like the only one he cares about is director.
I think that's the only one he cared about. Scorsese cared about director for a portion of his life, but he had to wait for a hot second. Bradley Cooper can pump his brakes.
I just hope he doesn't switch over to A Star is Born. Because that would be a step back in his career. I want to give the Best Picture nominees.
Do something for God's sakes, man.
And I want you to tell me.
This is great. Thank you, John. Thank you, Sean.
Of the Best Picture nominees, this is all I'm going to say, and then we'll make our picks later. Which win would make you happiest, and which one, if it won, would make you the most angry?
Actually, Sean, have you heard about Bradley Cooper's favorite horror movie of all time?
No. What is it?
A Star is Children of the Corn.
I'll go first.
They're getting worse.
To me, if A Star is Born won... No, I'm sorry. I changed it. If Black Panther won, I would be the happiest. I would love to see Marvel Studios have an actual Best Picture winner. And I agree with everything Kevin says. If we had a winner like Black Panther, it would change the conversation of what is actually a Best Picture nominated or worthy film. To me, I would be most disappointed of this entire crop if our winner at the end of the night was Bohemian Rhapsody, because I don't think it belongs there.
I think the one I'd be most disappointed by would be Green Book winning Best Picture. Now, that won the PGA, which is I read a stat, which we didn't discuss yet. I think 29 years, 20 of the films that won PGA went on to win Best Picture.
That's
now,
a lot.
There's no Best Director nomination for Peter Farrelly, but that didn't stop Argo from winning without a director nomination either. But
what would make you happiest?
Happiest out of that crop would be Star is Born. Okay. But Roma, very right there. I think equally happy. Black Panther, I don't think it deserves Best Picture. But to the point I made and what you just made, I would be happy for what it would do for other genres. Now, here's the thing. That's kind of me playing into the Oscars game, right? Like it's not really what deserves it. But right. It's kind of like, you know, whatever game is being played here. So if I'm going to step to their level and kind of play their game, if that movie is able to enable an opening for other genres later on, I'm cool with that. It needs to be fixed somehow.
Jake, what about yourself?
A Star is Born would make me happiest.
It's your number one of the year.
Yeah. What would make me least happy would probably be, God, either Green Book or Bohemian Rhapsody. Either of those would just make me roll my eyes. Green Book, because I feel like Oscars are taking a 30-year step back. Bohemian Rhapsody, because it's just not that good.
Right.
Did you guys hear about Bradley Cooper's favorite pop song of all time? Sean, have you heard about this?
I haven't. Kevin, what is it?
It's A Star is Natalie Imbruglia's Torn.
Dear God.
Remember that song by Natalie Imbruglia?
If you have to put the name of the person in it.
You know, remember Natalie Imbruglia's song Torn? It's a great song.
The pun's officially too long. I want to switch gears away from married? Oscars.
how does someone live with you?
To Glass, the highest grossing film of last weekend.
Pump the brakes, dude.
M. Night Shyamalan's trilogy capping Glass. A lot of people saw it. I think the initial reactions to it was that it's a dumpster fire, and then as more people saw it, actually came to the Real Blend Twitter feed and said, this isn't nearly as bad as I thought it was.
Yeah, I'm actually finding more and more people stepping up and dying on the hill that is Glass.
Yeah, so I want to now put up a spoiler warning and let everybody know that if you haven't seen Glass, we are going to talk in depth about things that we didn't like about Glass. And we're not gonna get too in-depth about it. We reviewed the movie in last week's podcast. You can go back and rewatch that one if you want to. This is more just to discuss, I think, because we weren't able to in the moment, why we think the movie didn't work. Because all three of us basically agree with the fact that it didn't work. And the biggest question that I want to start with for anybody who decides that they think whatever M. Night Shyamalan did was good, is if the point of the... So we're into spoiler territory now. You can't yell at us anymore. If the point of Sarah Paulson's group was to identify people with superpowers and eliminate them, what the heck is the point of the institution at all? Like, why not just kill them the minute you interact with them? Why is she running tests on them at all to make them believe they don't have powers when they're just supposed to eliminate them? Can you guys answer that at all?
No. I genuinely don't. And I mean, was the point to then try to make us question as an audience whether or not they really had powers? Because
yes,
which that made no sense to me because we have two movies that prove that they do in fact have powers.
And also, yeah. Bruce Willis has been fighting crime for the past 18 years or 19 years as this, guy in the hood, basically. And now all of a sudden, because one woman's talking to him in the hospital, he's supposed to believe that maybe she's right.
Right.
And that everything he's been doing this whole time.
That'd be like someone trying to tell you that you're not handsome. You know better.
I do know better. I will never believe that. When did the movie go off the rails for you guys,
whenever
officially?
They stepped outside the insane asylum.
Yep. That was it?
Yep. Yeah, that was it. Jake and I were sitting next to each other going, this is pretty good.
It's actually pretty good, yeah. Okay, yeah. I have another question.
Yeah.
How does Kevin not know who Mr. Glass is? If his dad was on the train, and then the train derailed, and then Mr. Glass was arrested and institutionalized as the guy who derailed the train, that's national news. He would know who killed his father. He knows his dad was on that train.
How often do we meet Kevin, though?
Kevin was young enough to know that his father got on that train. They do show that scene.
And they show the scene. And
how awful was that moment when they have to show you the briefcase to remind you, hey, this is the name you're looking for.
But wouldn't he know?
Crumb, it's Mr. Crumb Glass on it really big. Yes, he would know who Mr. Glass is. Yes. Also, this is a nitpicky one, but when Bruce Willis comes into the house to fight those two guys who jumped the man on the street for the point of the viral video, you know what scene I'm talking about?
Yes.
Those two guys sitting in the house. The sound that tips them off to the fact that someone's in the house with them is Bruce Willis turning on water, right? Mm. Like, they hear water go on in a sink. But water is his kryptonite. So why did Bruce Willis turn water on when he went into that?
He needed to turn on Pitbull instead. That would have been a better choice.
That's my kryptonite.
You know what I mean?
So the culmination of M. Night's whole trilogy is to introduce a secret society that tracks down people with secret powers and prevents them from exposing the fact that they have secret powers. Right? Is that what I'm led to believe? And yet somehow Elijah figures a way to circumvent her plan and get the footage out to everybody. Now, my big takeaway is this. So everybody sees the footage, right?
And everyone instantly believes it.
But what would they care? It doesn't look like, it's not like mega superpowers. You don't see anyone fly. You don't see anyone rip a truck in half. It essentially looks like two big dudes fighting each other. And Kevin brought up the fact that, like, yes, one guy runs on all fours, so maybe that looks a little bit weird. But it's not like you saw people do, like, X-Men level type stuff.
Bending steel is pretty crazy. I mean, if I saw a video of a guy bending steel, I'd probably be like,
yeah, but is that enough to make you stop and then question reality?
What? Let's be honest here. If we all got a video today of a guy bending a huge thing of steel, you wouldn't be blown away by that?
But it shows.
Bending
it
with his hands.
The video actually went out. The video that I remember was whenever he put that steel bar and then he kind of bent it back.
Yeah.
Who can do that?
But would you really see that and have it question your entire existence? I would not see that and go, superheroes exist.
But the whole point of the movie
is that
that's
really freaking strong.
That guy's really strong. Or I think the material of the bar that he's bending.
Yeah, and then
is
it
fake.
Makes me question, okay, what is he bending? There's too much skepticism when
the
internet
superheroes.
Has created worldwide skepticism, or should have anyway, with videos. Not, I mean, they showed people stopping in their tracks at the train station, and their minds just being freaking blown by what they saw.
Yeah.
And I just don't believe that that's what people's genuine reaction would be to those videos.
But the point of the movie is that they're not superheroes. It's just extensions of human beings.
But they're super. I mean, come on.
No, the whole point is that comic books, which I actually think is kind of brilliant, is that comic books are an extension of things that human beings can actually do. There's no laser eyes. There's no thing like that. But I just.
But isn't that? But isn't that something that actually that Mr. Glass actually says that superheroes exist?
Yeah.
Kind of.
But I think the point was that it's not superhero like you would think. It's a superhero, and that is an extension of human capabilities. That's
also
what I gathered from it.
The exposition in the third act is the screenwriting is so bad. Everything that came out of Mrs. Glass, Mr. Glass's mom, I don't even know if she has a name, and it was just so cliched and horrible.
How many times did they say limited edition?
Oh my God. It was so bad.
I'm like, they may as well have just stopped and looked at the camera.
Yeah.
For everything that they said. As in, like, do you get it? Do you get it? It was like listening to one of Kevin's puns, where they just drive it in and they look at you and go, do you get it?
Like, for example, did you guys hear about James McAvoy's favorite movie of 2018?
No, what is it?
James Mac a Beautiful Boy.
Oh, dear God. I'm going to argue, too, that the movie goes back and ruins
get it, Jake?
Two things about Unbreakable and Split. I got tired of James McAvoy switching personalities.
I thought that was cool.
And I love it. No, I love it. And I think he's great doing it. But the more he did it in Glass, the more I was like, okay, I've seen
it. Well, the novelty wore off. Like, it's not like the first time you see Split and you're like, holy crap, I did not know that this actor is capable. Even going into it. I mean, yeah, he's arguably the best part of Glass. But he's doing something that we all already knew that he could do.
Yes.
Here's the thing. I want to say, I didn't hate Glass. I think Glass is a very flawed film, a very disappointing movie, that actually has great potential to it. I mean, there's an hour and 15 minutes or so that's great, that I loved a lot. What's frustrating about Glass is how it falls apart. Like, what the heck happened? Like, I mean, I just don't understand what happened. What happened to the writing?
Well, I don't think that after Unbreakable, which I know you watched recently,
it's his best movie,
that is the continuation of the story that you wanted to see. Like,
no. I kind of choose to forget that Glass happened.
Yeah, I'm cool with Unbreakable being its own thing.
In my mind, Unbreakable is its own movie, Split's its own movie, and then there's a film that I saw one time called Glass, and I'm just not going to acknowledge for the rest
of my life. If you had told me that at the end of Unbreakable, after these two guys have established themselves as, okay, you truly are a superpowered being, and you exist, which makes me a supervillain, and I'm identifying myself through your existence, that the continuation of that story, which to me was a great cliffhanger ending, is they go to an insane asylum to be questioned by a woman who's part of a secret society who tries to expose superpowered beings, I'd be like, no, that's not where I wanted
that
story.
And he dies in a puddle, dude.
He drowned. Dude, I think Bruce Willis spent about a week on set. Tops. Tops. And again, I wanted to...
Did he ever actually... like? Did he know that they were rolling at any point? Because I don't feel like he was ever actually acting. I feel like maybe he just thought they were in rehearsal.
I want to mention how cheap it looks. Like the finale of that movie, first off, everything set in the Institute, there's no other patients that you ever see. They can't even do like a group session.
They've got two employees.
They have two employees constantly who are the one guy shows up and has a conversation with another employee, and then like he relieves the other guy.
Oh God, and this then is making it worse.
Then the confrontation, like they tease this thing of like the biggest skyscraper in Philadelphia history and this huge confrontation at it, but then they don't even do it. They have a face off in a parking lot outside of the Institute.
And that building looked cool. It was like waving itself. Did you see that? Like it was like a really cool building. I wanted to see more of that building.
Now I can't afford it.
But I'll say this, like, you know, I want to give credit to Eric Eisenberg. He wrote a great article about this for Cinema Blend that I read that broke down literally what we're talking about. Like, all these, mm-hmm. Was it you wrote it or Eric?
No, Eric did.
It's on Cinema Blend.
I was apologizing for my ice. Gabe yells at me because I drink water and the ice makes a lot of noise. And then he has to take it all out, but... Leave that in, Gabe, so people hear it.
I'll say it again. I'll just say, like, one thing I wanted to bring up is that I thought Eric Eisenberg wrote a great article about... these questions that we're asking, because it really kind of like nails in exactly what we're talking about, like the decisions that were made in the script, the point Sean was making about the 19 years of Bruce Willis knowing he has superpowers or superhuman capabilities. So read Eric's article. He also hosts Hero Blend. So
he does. Oh, there you go. Look at that. Yeah. I love that plug. We decided.
I'm sorry,
last
if we could
week,
just go back to the ice for a second. Could you tell? Could you really dive into like what sort of shape is this ice? What is the consistency?
I want to get to.
Wait, no. That was Vice in your cup, not ice, correct?
Yes, exactly. Yeah. Best Picture nominated Vice with Best Director Adam McKay. This week's blend game is hashtag Sam Jackson blend, which we decided to kind of play based around the fact that he's in Glass and also the fact that we haven't done him yet, and he's been in a number of amazing roles. And I think the obvious choice is going to be one that probably most of us chose. But I'm starting to think that
you didn't, because you got a twinkle in your eye, O'Connell.
Ta-da! Song and dance. Kevin, I've been told you get to go first.
I mean, there's really no build-up here. I'll just say it's Pulp Fiction. I mean, it's the obvious choice, in my opinion. I mean, I don't know. Everything about that movie, everything about that role is perfect. It's the best thing he's ever done. My favorite thing he's ever done. I can point to... four scenes to make my argument. I mean, Ezekiel 25:17, that entire sequence, the Marvin in the car sequence, the cleaning of Marvin in the car sequence, the entire dialogue, the revisiting of Ezekiel 25:17 in calmer form against Tim Roth, where the whole arc of his character comes out, which was brilliant. The wallet, just the way he carries himself, the way he sips that Sprite in that cup. It was Sprite, right? Yeah, just the sound and the look on his face. I have never seen a more appetizing hamburger in my life than Brett's burger.
Big Kahuna Burger.
And like, it's little things about what he does. Like, I love when he looks over at the guy on the couch. Oh my God. There's a shot in Pulp Fiction. Yeah. But there's a shot in Pulp Fiction in that sequence where someone says something. I don't know if it was to him. You know, and he goes, "Oh, I'm sorry, did I break your concentration? You know, oh, you were finished, then allow me to retort." But there's a line where he says, "I don't remember asking you a GD thing," right? Yeah. And then they cut
to it. He screams it.
And then they cut to another character. Then they go back to his face, and he's still staring at the guy. Yeah. Angrily. He hasn't moved in like 30 seconds. It's like the most it's so brilliant. And then that entire, oh my God. And then there's a guy in that sequence, by the way, that whole sequence, Brett, and then I love Vincent.
Is it Brett or Brad? Is it Brett
that
or
guy,
Brad?
It's Brett, B-R-E-T-T.
Why yeah. Is Brad? Look at the big brain on
Brett.
Yeah, yeah.
I thought it was Brad.
I think it was Brad for a long time in my mind too.
Yeah.
But then that person does look like Jerry Seinfeld.
Seinfeld.
Yeah.
Isn't that comes out with a gun?
Isn't that Arquette? Isn't the actor that's one of the Arquette's siblings?
Really?
Look that up.
Wait a second. I rewatched Pulp Fiction the other day, Sean, and I looked for that thing that you said.
That Travolta goes past her. Yeah, Travolta
he's
goes
there.
Past them. Yeah, he's on
what?
His way to the bathroom.
I've seen that movie
what
a
scene?
Billion times, and I've never
in the
seen that.
Opening in the opening of the diner.
Oh yeah,
Travolta's
John Travolta
there.
Passes
in the opening
them.
Scene.
I need
yeah,
to go back
you see
and
him
watch
go past
that.
In the T-shirt.
You see him in the distance. I think the shot is on her. And if you look in the distance,
right.
He's at the far end of the restaurant looking for the bathroom.
Yeah, you see the hair and the T-shirt.
Something always happens to him when he's in the bathroom.
I know that movie. And yes. It's so crazy. And you know what's even crazier about Pulp Fiction is like, well, first of all, the shot choices, I know we're not doing Quentin blend, but like there's that whole sequence when Travolta and Jackson get to the door and they realize they're early and Quentin leaves the camera there as they walk down the hallway to talk far away from us. And then they get into a whole, I mean, I don't think I've ever seen a film like make hitmen like relatable. Like yeah, it was like an interesting
way. That's the beauty of it. The fact that they had to say, let's get back into character
right.
Says a lot about them as hitman.
But well, that the whole hamburger sequence, I mean, everything about that's to me is the quintessential Samuel L. Jackson role. Like that, no one has ever written a character for him, in my opinion, that he has played that great. Like it was masterful what he did with that dialogue.
I mean, you could argue that that role, can I jump into mine?
Yeah.
Am I next?
Yeah.
Yes, you can go next.
Well, I mean, I also chose Jules from Pulp Fiction. I mean, you could argue that that character shaped how we perceive Samuel L. Jackson to be as a person. And therefore shaped
and he's not like that.
He's
which
not.
Is crazy.
And therefore shaped the roles that he chose as an actor. What I love about Jules as a character is I both feel like I know him and feel like I don't.
Yeah.
There are a lot of things that because, you know, it's a supporting character. He received a supporting actor nomination and lost to Martin Landau, I think, for Ed Wood.
Ugh, that's such a crime.
He's great in that movie.
He is very good.
But, I mean, there are flashes of who he is because of, especially after what happens with him not getting shot. And then him sort of buying into, you know, the Bible quote after not buying into it for so many years. But, I mean, we don't really know who he was before all of this. And we don't really know what happens to him after, other than the fact that he's not a part of, he's not there with Travolta when they start looking for Bruce Willis. All we know is that he does actually, in fact, leave. Like Kane in Kung Fu. So I like that it's this character that I feel like I really, really know. But then I actually really, he adds all these layers to it. While really not being in the movie that much, if you really think about it. I mean, he's arguably the co-star of one of the parts, but I don't know, he's not in it a ton if you really think about it.
But Jake, that, to your point, to what Jake just said, though, and I'm not trying to interrupt, but I want to help mold Jake's point even more. There's even that sequence with Brett with the hamburger where he goes, I don't eat much meat because my girlfriend's a vegetarian.
Yeah. Which like, pretty much makes me a vegetarian.
Right.
But then
super,
again, is like...
Is that true?
That was like the beauty of that is that ever since he showed his hand and said that, you know, that whole Ezekiel thing is just this thing that he says.
Right.
You don't really know what he's... And, you know, like the fact that they had to get back into character.
Right.
Shows that you don't... When he's there with those guys, you don't really know how much of that is a part that he's trying to play. You know,
but why say that line then? Why even mention your girlfriend?
When we're introduced to him, he's just talking to his buddy about burgers in Europe. You don't think that he's this stone cold killer that's going to go and blast these kids away, but he snaps into this character that he has to play. From the moment he walks through that door, I don't know what to believe he says and what he doesn't.
Here's God. Where I get to go.
So what? Sean, just tell me why you're wrong.
Here's where I get to tell you, the guys, that I don't really like Pulp Fiction all that.
My stomach is about to drop because of the wrath that you are about to receive from Kevin McCarthy.
I almost just said I quit. Like, I was actually going to say what Jake said.
But I will argue that the reason I didn't choose Pulp Fiction
is because you're wrong.
Is because he's not in it. It's not a Sam Jackson movie. It's not Sam Jackson's movie.
Oh, right? I think he's the star.
Are we doing movie or are we doing role?
Yeah, well, even role, I'm going to say that once I tell you what my choice is, you'll understand that I'm pairing movie and role together, because there's a lot of Pulp Fiction that has nothing to do with Sam Jackson. There's all of Travolta and Uma Thurman. There's all of Bruce Willis and the Gimp. There's a ton of that movie that isn't Jules. And so when Jules is on, he's fantastic, but he's not in it a lot. You know, he's in it enough, believe me. And he owns every scene that he's in.
Well, let me ask you, before you get to your pick, Sean.
Yeah.
If we did Anthony Hopkins blend, would right. you then Ooh, not choose Silence of the Lambs? Because he's only in it for 16 minutes?
No, I wouldn't choose Silence of the Lambs.
Because he's
How
only in for 16 minutes?
How would you not choose minutes? Silence of the
Lambs? I'd have to look over his filmography, but I would argue that it's not necessarily an Anthony Hopkins movie.
Oh, my God. Okay, I'm sorry. I can't buy into that logic. He Why? Is because he's the star of the movie. Because he's not in it. Because the screen time isn't equated out to
it's
what you
It's a Buffalo
need.
Bob movie.
It's not the Buffalo Bill movie.
Okay,
by
so
the way.
If we do Ted Buffalo Levine Bill. Blend, you can Bill. Choose Silence of yeah. the Lambs.
My choice for my favorite. Again, we're not arguing best. We're arguing my favorite Sam Jackson movie and performance. Coincidentally, and again, I tweeted this.
Can we guess?
When I landed on it. Yes, when I landed on it, I was legitimately surprised that I actually do believe this 110%.
I think you chose Django.
Oh, God, no, I don't like Django.
I know,
no.
that's why I thought that was the point.
No,
like, it
no, no, no.
You
don't All right, like, I didn't
also,
choose
he's amazing
Django.
In Django.
I didn't choose Django.
Don't you give me the rap, Gabe.
He's
I give
pandering.
You the rap.
He's such a pandering, offensive character in Django.
You don't
Kevin,
like,
you got to guess.
You don't like Django?
No, I think Tarantino topped out at Pulp Fiction. He's been chasing Pulp Fiction ever since.
Oh my God. Have you seen Inglourious Basterds? What are you talking about, Sean? All right,
the point being, guess.
All right, guess. Wow. I mean, at this point, it probably stinks on a plane. I have no idea. I mean, I'm trying
My choice is Unbreakable. I think Unbreakable is Sam Jackson's best performance and film because he's integral to the film. It is a brilliant deconstruction of comic books, and the impact that heroes have on society. It's a slow burning development of this man who doesn't believe he has powers. Now strip away Split and Glass. Just think Unbreakable, right? It's this guy who survived something spectacular, and has had a couple of really crazy things happen over the course of his life, but he just chalks it up to these are unusual events. But over the course of it, because of the implementation of what Elijah says to him, he believes he might be a superhero. And the scene where his kid is loading on the weights and he's bench pressing is such a genius origin story scene where Bruce Willis says to him, how much is that? And his kid says, all of it. And you just get goosebumps because you realize, oh my God, Elijah's right. This guy's a superhero, right? And then you learn Elijah's story and Sam Jackson sells it. He sells. He's like, if I'm this person and in my mind, I shouldn't exist. I have to exist for a reason. And the reason is you. And it's a great performance. It's tremendous. It's a great origin story for the hero and the villain. I might argue.
I mean, I'm not going to knock you for that. I mean, that's I would probably put that in my top three of his performances.
I jokingly give Sean a lot of mess because we disagree on things, and I do it in a very loving way because I love Sean. He's one of my best friends. That's actually a great choice.
Yeah.
So I got nothing negative to say about that one. I'm sorry.
And I love when you guys always want to jump down my throat.
Like our claws came out and they slowly started
And now I'm like,
back.
And, And it happens often. You guys always want to rip me apart, and then I give my choice, and you guys
are
like,
you say something about like not liking Mad Max, and you just make it so easy.
And then you say Toy Story 2 is the best sequel of all time. Sean, you cannot say those things.
You reap what you sow, O'Connor.
That's why we treat you this way.
I'll even say this. A lot of people said Jurassic Park, and I would never choose Jurassic Park, because to me, that's not a Sam Jackson movie. But by your guys' logic, it's an amazing movie that Sam Jackson happens to be in. Jackson movie?
Okay, I ask you this question. What is his character's name?
No idea. I have no idea.
I know what Hannibal Lecter's name is, man.
Okay, fine. Hannibal Lecter, fine. I mean, I get that point. That's fine.
Wait, Sean, you actually don't think Silence of the Lambs is an Anthony Hopkins movie? You really think that?
I don't know. I'd have to think that over.
Come on.
I mean, it's truly a Jodie Foster movie. Like, you can't argue that it's not. The movie is her character.
I mean, it is. You're right.
Yeah.
But at the end of the day, it's an
Anthony Hopkins movie. Is Star Wars a Chewbacca movie?
No.
That was horrible.
That was pretty good. All right, audience picks. Kalina, Michael Kamins, Robert Shivery, and many, many others went with Pulp Fiction, obviously. I want to hold this one because this one's a ton of fun. Sieber Joberg said Kingsman. Kingsman's a good choice. I wouldn't have gone with it, but he's really fun in
Kingsman.
And he
brought back the hamburgers for that one.
I can't do the list.
Hamburger.
I couldn't do the list. Arthur
Mingo said Django.
Our good friend
Carrie Ellen Case said Star Wars Episode 2, Attack of the Clones, which is an inarguable statement. That is the worst Star Wars movie ever
accurate.
Made.
That is 100%
ever
that's,
made.
It's not even an opinion. That's
no,
a fact.
That is a fact.
That's fact.
Yes.
That is actually a fact.
That is written in a tome somewhere.
Chiseled into rock.
It's in the Constitution.
It's such a fact that every other Star Wars movie that comes out, no matter how bad they are, they
it
immediately
will never
go
be as
above
bad as
it.
That.
Like the quote on the Solo DVD is not Episode 2.
Hey, we're better than Episode 2. You open up some Blu-rays, Ron Howard going, we're better than Episode 2. Enjoy.
And we all have to agree. So Carrie Ellen Case, I cannot understand at all how you defend Attack of the Clones, but hey.
But is she picking Mace Windu, or is she picking Attack of the Clones?
No, she specifically is saying Attack of the Clones.
Most underrated Sam Jackson movie? Long Kiss Goodnight. Okay.
Yeah, that's a great one.
Love Long
I like, you know what movie really I like? Romance. I like, and it's a Chicago movie, actually, The Negotiator.
Oh, that's another good one.
I like Black Snake Moon.
With He Who Shall Not Be Named. Yeah. And someone else put up his cameo, obviously, in Coming to America, which is a lot of fun. And very not safe
Kingsman's
for work.
Kingsman's a good choice, but I will say, Pulp Fiction was the obvious one for all us to go to. Unbreakable, you made a very good argument about Unbreakable. I think Unbreakable, what you said about the character and the importance of the character.
Yeah.
It's funny because I was watching Unbreakable the other day. I think that might be Bruce Willis's best performance. Like, emotionally.
It's very possible.
I mean, the guy has made some great action movies and Die Hard's great. But, like, emotionally, I don't think I've ever seen Bruce Willis have that kind of range. Like, that he did in
I think I might like him more in Sixth Sense.
He's
been
successful.
But Shyamalan gets good stuff out of Bruce Willis.
Agreed. Yeah.
Do you know what? I do put Sixth Sense above Unbreakable in terms of favorite Shyamalan movies. Yeah, but they're like one.
I feel bad for Sixth Sense because all anyone ever talks about is the ending. But you take away that ending, and that is a beautiful, heartbreaking movie about this kid that doesn't belong and a man who's trying to mend his own life by helping mend the life of this child. I mean, like, unfortunately, it gets too wrapped up in the ending these days. But the movie itself is I mean, he got a directing nomination for that movie. It's a beautifully made film.
The Toni Collette car sequence.
Yeah. Oh, my God.
Is incredible. And, Jake, you're so right, man. Like, that is literally the first thing I think about when I think about that movie is the ending.
Yeah.
Which I kind of want to revisit it now.
And honestly, like, same thing with Signs. Like, everyone, whenever I tell people how much I love Signs, they go, oh, but the ending with the water is stupid. Okay. Forget the last 5 minutes. That is an amazing character study of a guy who lost his faith and something around the world is happening that's making him question just what it means to have faith. Like, it's
amazing. Incredible about Sixth Sense also? It's the simplest practical effects. It's like, you know, in the scene in the kitchen where Toni Collette turns her back.
Yeah.
And then she turns around and everything's open and all
Kevin,
the drawers
do you know
open.
How they did that?
No.
I would love, well, actually, I take it back. I don't want to know how they did it.
Or just when they say, when
turn
she's
to
like,
me for a second there, buddy.
Something must have happened up ahead. And he's like, a woman got hit by a car. Yeah. And then they cut back to Toni Collette and the woman's like looking in the window.
Oh, my God.
It's simple things. Yeah. But once they happen, they get under your skin. Yeah. And you're just like, oh, my gosh.
I will say something. I rewatched Signs over the weekend. Not as good as I remembered.
Really?
How are your weekends like 100 hours long?
I was doing an M. Night Shyamalan rewatch. Well, let me ask you guys this question, honestly. When was the last time each of you fully watched Signs?
In theaters. In theaters when it came out.
It's probably been 10 years.
Revisit it.
Yeah.
It doesn't hold up.
It's slow, right?
It's intriguing. What Jake said is why the movie works, is the arc. But you know what scene in that movie? I get shivers thinking about it. I don't even know how you write something like this. His wife against that tree.
And honestly, and those are the scenes I think of. That's a scene that's what convinces me that it's good. Ooh. But you're saying that it's
doesn't even
because Shyamalan. Correct me if I'm wrong. Shyamalan is the guy that kills her, right?
Yeah, and he's
and like
that's
that scene where I honestly remember liking that scene where, and I normally don't like Shyamalan in his movies, but I remember liking that.
Oh, he's great.
He goes
that scene
in
the car,
he's sitting in the car.
Yeah. Great scene. That scene actually, my dad was sitting next to me. He goes, "That's a really great scene." Signs has great scenes.
Yeah, and Joaquin Phoenix is great in that movie.
He's very good in it. It just didn't like Unbreakable gets better with age. I think Signs is a little bit reversed.
Interesting.
But rewatch it. I'm curious if you guys feel as strong as you did the first time you saw it because I loved it the first time I saw it. I think I might like The Village more than Signs, to be honest.
I think The Village is great.
The Village.
Well, once again, okay, you know what? To your point,
I think The Village is really good.
I knocked The Village because of the ending, because I hate the ending so much. But up to the ending, it is a beautifully made film. That James Newton Howard score is gorgeous, and it's beautifully shot. You're okay, all right.
Bryce Dallas Howard is really good in it, and Joaquin Phoenix is really good in it.
Can we talk about how really cool good. It was? To, like Jake and I were sitting next to each other during Glass.
I don't hate the ending.
Which movie? Village.
I don't hate the ending.
I love the ending for Village blew my mind.
My problem is it gives the film no point. There's no point to the film now.
We're just living with these people. They don't know it. Like we are them.
But
like,
the whole plot of the film is removed once you know that it's all fake.
But they're still living
their
lives.
It's the equivalent of it's all a dream.
No, but they're still living their lives in the village. But my point
no, but
being,
like the film stops when the film like the film stops and starts in a 2-hour span. The point of the 2 hours is that these people are kept within this village because there are monsters all around them,
and they figure it out.
Yeah, but the townspeople are lying to them because they just want them to be in the village. The townspeople want them to exist in the village. They make up the rumor about the monsters to keep them all there. That myth is still. Yes,
no.
The townspeople, Sigourney Weaver, William Hurt, and all those guys.
Well, yeah, I consider the people like in the real world outside the village to be the townspeople. Okay, so the elders, as it were, are the people that
rewatch
the movie's like there's no rewatchability to that.
You're thinking about Dude, Where's My Car? Where the two guys can't find their car.
I'm confused.
Jake's
what's
big,
the difference?
Jake's a big Ashton Kutcher fan. And Sean William Scott. We all love Stifler, right?
Actually, I actually do like Sean William Scott.
All right, listen. Next week, we're going to stay.
The Rundown's awesome. Is it The Rundown?
The Rundown's amazing. Yeah. But Stifler is one of my favorite characters of all time. Like that first
Gabe,
American Pie.
We got so close to wrapping up, man.
Good. Let's keep going. Let's do Stifler.
Let's do
Gabe
Blend. Can we do our favorite Gabe rap?
Next week, we're going to stay a little bit in the Oscar realm. And we're going to do hashtag Amy Adams blend, which might lead to some very interesting conversations.
Okay, so are we doing our favorite Amy Adams, our favorite film that Amy Adams is in? Or are we doing our favorite Amy Adams performance?
I combo
for her, it could be two completely different.
You're literally doing whichever one you want to do. Gabe literally just says it's whatever speaks most to you. So if there's a performance of hers that you think is your favorite and you want to highlight it, choose that. If there's a movie that she happens to be in please, God Almighty, do not choose Man of Steel, or I will burn this podcast to the ground.
Well, then I can't be on the show next week because that's audience probably my choice.
The audience is not ready for us to have our Man of Steel discussion.
Oh, they are. Yet. They are ready because it's amazing.
Emotionally, we're not ready.
I'm going to show you the light, Sean.
Our Man of Steel discussion yet. Listeners can follow us, of course, on social media at Real Blend.
Hey, Jake.
There's a very active community over there.
Did you hear about Sean's favorite George Romero film?
Head over there and follow us. It's Shaun of the Dead.
Shaun of the Dead. Shaun of the Dead. But actually, that doesn't work because there's
you
a
could say that. You could
Shaun
say that's a real movie. Right film. Real movie.
Head over to iTunes and please leave us a review. We will read it on the show. Please tell a friend about the show. Let people know if you think that this is something that they will enjoy, that they should also be listening to Real Blend.
Hey, Jake.
Just don't start at episode one. Because episode one is not a good representation of
Jake, did you hear about Sean's favorite actor from Deadpool? Wait. Wait, actually, I don't know where I'm going with that one.
To be fair, that was better than all the other ones you've done on the show.
I was stuck on Dead, so I was going to say Sean of the Ed Screen, but it makes sense because your name doesn't end with Dead, so.
We'll be back next week. Thanks, everyone, for tuning in. We really appreciate it.
Solo name scene.
Dunkirk.
Save big on brunch for mom, all in the Kroger app. Get half gallons of delicious Kroger milk for $1.29 each. Then get flavorful Tyson Natural Boneless Chicken Breasts for $2.49 a pound, all with your card and a digital coupon. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today. Or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.